Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I'm calling this show Post-Pandemic Relationship Repair. As more and more folks are fully vaccinated, we are beginning to emerge from our quarantine bubbles. And I think we know that many relationships need a sexual recharge. My returning guest, Michael Castleman, author of recently published Sizzling Sex for Life, subtitle is Everything You Need to Know to Maximize Erotic Pleasure at Any Age, is with us again, and I am so pleased about that. He can help us sort out some of these sexual issues and other issues, too. Welcome back, Michael Castleman.
Oh, thank you for having me on again, Diane. I love your show.
Well, thank you. I love your books, and especially this most recent one. And we talked a little bit about it last March when you were on the show, and we're going to talk more about it. But several studies have shown that there's been more masturbation and porn use during the last 14 months of quarantine. And so in the process, a lot of relationships have suffered. You're aware of this, too, because you have your greatsexguidance.com, where you've answered lots and lots of questions over the past. You started it in 2010, I believe. So, and then you've answered more than 12,000 questions over the last 40 years, including for Playboy Advisor. So, what's your initial take on couples doing a sexual recharge?
Well, you know, this past 14 months has been very difficult for everyone. Even in the best circumstances, people have been, emotionally stressed with COVID fear and the constant changing public health directions about how we're supposed to do it, you know, wear masks, you can take your masks off. I mean, at every inflection point, there's a whole new thought process, decision-making tree that people have to go through. And for a lot of people, they've been isolated from their honeys, very similar to like military deployment, where you just can't see someone. And other couples who have been sequestering in place together, that could be a mixed blessing. I mean, some couples have thrived with so much together time, and other couples have been stressed out by it and have encountered problems. And so now we are on the cusp of returning to what people are going to call normal, and that too is a big adjustment. And, you know, when you sort of come out of your cave and see the sun again and can go out and play, you have to make a set of decisions about how you want to do that, and you're dragging the baggage of the last 14 months and where your relationship may have suffered, and you just may have not seen your lover. And so all these things make it a challenge to be involved with anyone sexually today.
Lots and lots of challenges, and as with so many in so many areas, we need better communication. And of course, you write a lot about that. But communicate—that's the best way to begin to come out of the bubble, I think. Most, and I talk to your partner. You know, most women have unsatisfactory sex lives, and the main reason is that the majority of men don't know what to do. And your books are addressing men and women, but helping men. Men often need more help because of the way they were raised and the kinds of, and they're driven by testosterone. You point that out in your book. But communicate. Start to have a talk. And how might a couple begin this sort of engagement?
My own preferred approach would be to combine touching and talking. I think the talking of it is to simply admit that it's been a very tough 14 months, whether you've been together or whether you've been apart. I think it helps to declare that this has been a tough time, and if you can, to detail what has been especially hard for you, each person who does this, because intimacy is the art of self-revelation, and so you need to reveal a little bit about who you are and how you're feeling and how this passage has affected you. Beyond that, I think I would combine talking with touching. And when I say touching, I don't just mean jumping into genital sex. What's so important, you know, a lot of men think that sex equals intercourse. Without for a moment denigrating intercourse, I'm all for intercourse. But actually, what lovemaking is really about is mutual, gentle, whole-body touch, massage, that eventually, after about 20 or 30 minutes, focuses on the genitals. And a lot of men just jump right to genital sex, and they reject what, you know, is derisively often called foreplay, thinking that it's a waste of time, and they just want to get to the main event, the real action. The fact is that both men and women function much better sexually when there's a lot of non-genital touching at first, when there's a lot of warm-up time. In fact, a whole lot of women can't respond sexually at all unless they get enough warm-up time through gentle, non-genital touch. And the fact is, for men, if you want your penis to work right, if you want to raise erections when you want to, if you want to avoid premature ejaculation and last as long as you'd like, and if you would like to come when you want, that also depends a great deal on non-genital touch, on whole body massage. And so as couples get back together again and start to explore what they've been missing for the last more than a year, you know, a foot massage, a hand, you know, massaging someone's feet, legs, arms, shoulders, neck. So many people store tension in their shoulders and necks and backs. Whole body massage is just a wonderful way to get literally back in touch. And as you're talking about how this 14 months has affected you, the art of mutual touch is really the fundamental skill in getting back in touch with your lover.
It is the fundamental skill, and massaging each other first can relax what's tense, perk up what's tired, and it even sends a message to the brain that says, "Wow, that feels good. Give me more." I get a weekly massage from my husband, and he is such a good massage therapist. And that's what my brain says all the time. "Wow, that feels good. Give me more." But it's a great way to slow down and think about your body and what you want. The two words I've used the most in the 30-plus years as a sex therapist, two words I've used the most, slow down.
Yeah, well, and, those are two great words.
And we have to remember, you touched on it a little bit, but a woman's motor often takes more time to warm up, and it's usually about 20 minutes before she's really ready for penetrative sex. So I'm always telling my clients, don't rush it. And no matter how slow you're going, go more slowly.
I tell men, slow down and then slow down even more.
Yeah, same thing. So we're definitely, well, we're always on the same track when it comes to sexual activity and more.
Good advice. Personally, I like to make love to music. And so if people want to play music, then you should go mutual, gentle, whole-body caresses for at least 6 songs before you reach between anyone's legs. Six songs.
I love that.
Is about
so
20
the
minutes.
Whole-body caressing, 6 songs.
Yeah. And, you know, it helps men function better. And, you know, a lot of men just don't understand how the nervous system works. You know, we have 2 sets of nerves in our skin. And one is nerves that detect pain. So if you get a bee sting, those the pain nerves are activated and they send a message to your brain, hey, this hurts. But there are other nerves in the skin called C-tactile fibers. And those nerves are excited by gentle, massage-like caresses. And the messages that get sent to the brain there is exactly what you had just said, Diana. Hey, I like this. Let's do this more. And the C-tactile fibers, those nerves, the pleasure nerves in the skin, prime the body to enjoy sex more. So the more you get massage, the more you have... A lot of people understand that if you get a professional massage and then you have sex, the sex is better than if you just jump into bed and don't have a professional massage. Well, you don't need a professional massage if you just caress each other's skin yourselves. The goal should be touch every square inch of your lover's body, except the genitals, for 6 songs before you go for genital play. And then both of you will enjoy sex more. You'll function better. Penises will work better. Women will be more responsive. And you'll have 2 happy endings.
But unfortunately,
many people don't do that.
Many people don't. And you mentioned women will be more responsive. And that's so key. So many men would be very much more happy if their partners were more responsive and more enthusiastic. I mean, a lot of men say, and they're attracted to the enthusiasm of the actresses in porn, because we all know how those scenes end, but they're enthusiastic, even if they're acting. But that's something to strive for, I think, when you're having great sex that's also comfortable and familiar yet exciting, stimulating tranquility, sometimes I call it. But you can be enthusiastic about it. And men love to have a responsive, enthusiastic partner.
Yes, yes. And there's a robust research literature showing that men gauge their success as lovers by their own functioning, and by the fact that the woman is excited and aroused and orgasmic and fulfilled. Men want to have their lovers get off and be sexually satisfied. And a lot of men are clueless about why their lovers seem so indifferent. It's usually because the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, and that's where a book like yours is especially helpful. You say at the very beginning of the Sizzling Sex for Life, you say, just a minute, this is my 3rd and last sex book. It culminates a 50-year career as a sexuality journalist and counselor. And then you go into your history, how it all started, which is just fascinating. Your whole book is, this is the self-help book that is really needed. And my blurb is in your book, along with many other testimonials about the greatness of it. So men need help, and you've known this for a long time because your book's focus on men and the women they love, and of course this last book focuses plenty on women as well. But
I'm a man and I write for men.
Yes.
And I try to be sensitive to women's needs and the enormous research on what women like in bed. But the problem is that men are often vilified as the bad guys in sex. They're the guys who commit sexual assault. They're the guys who beat up on the women. They're the guys who don't seem to know what turns women on. Men are like a problem in sex. And a lot of it is not men's fault. Men, men just don't get real sex education that really teaches them how to master the art of lovemaking. And so my mission for my whole career has been to try to show men really how lovemaking is a win-win. If men make love the way women generally prefer, the women are happy, responsive, and they come. And the men are much happier, too, and their penises work better, and they have fewer sex problems. So if men want to have really great sex with no sex problems, they need to make love the way women generally prefer, which has to do with a lot of massage, mutual touching and caressing and kissing and hugging and whispered endearments and rolling around before anybody reaches between anybody else's legs.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And the great thing is that one of the great things about your book is that it is a thorough investigation of what's been known about sex based on research published over the past 70 years, and of course, many decades of your conversations with sex educators, researchers, counselors, coaches, and therapists. But yeah, you have many, many, some 2,500 research studies, and I like this one especially. Dartmouth scientists asked 1,600 Americans what makes them happy. Sex ranked at or near the top of the list. Moving from sans sex to weekly whoopee made people feel as good as having an extra $50,000 in the bank. That's I remember that study and when it first came out, and I thought, oh, this is, they put a $50,000 in the bank. That would make a lot of people really happy. But this kind of happiness is literally at your own fingertips, in your own bodies.
That's right. Yes, sex is a key to happiness. It's not the only key. And
no.
I'm not going to say that, you know, great sex can solve all your problems. No, it can't. But lovemaking and good sex, it makes people feel happy, and it makes people feel fulfilled and satisfied. And I love that $50,000 figure.
And the
thing is, it's hard to save up $50,000. It's really a challenge. On the other hand, it's not that hard to learn how to give a halfway decent massage, to learn how to receive a halfway decent massage, and to, you know, whoop it up in bed. It's a cheap way to earn $50,000.
That's right. That is right. And you also say, you give a lot of reasons for sex based on studies, and you say from three reasons, which would be beyond children, the motives for lovemaking emerged marital harmony and erotic pleasure. So you cite the 2007 University of Texas researchers. They asked, they had 442 respondents, age 17 to 52, and they came up with 234 more reasons. Talk about the top reasons and what that, for each gender, the women's and the men's, and what implications that has.
Well, the main reason for sex, the main permission giver to, okay, you can have sex, was to have children. And this is the religious motivation for sex that goes back thousands of years to biblical days. And So that was the only real legitimate reason to have sex for about 1,500 years. And then with the Industrial Revolution, theologians decided that sex was also okay to cement holy wedlock so that people could have children. But when these researchers asked a huge sample of people, why do you name all the reasons you've ever made love, children and marital harmony were way down the list. Down the list, like numbers 50 and 60. The top reasons that people of both genders, of all genders, I should say, make love is mutual attraction and mutual pleasure. And pleasure is really what sex is all about. And so, yes, you know, if you want to have children, by all means, have them. And if you want to cement your relationship, by all means, enjoy your lovemaking. But those should not be the limiting factors on sex. Those are simply the beginning of it. What sex is about is mutual attraction and pleasure. And, you know, people don't have enough pleasure in their lives. I mean, here's something that is a very inexpensive, cost-effective way to get a lot more pleasure in your life at very little cost. I mean, all you have to do is hold hands and hug and kiss and then lie down together. Lovemaking is really about pleasure.
With some intentionality.
And all of the research. Yeah?
Yes. With lie down together with some intentions. You know, going back to the harmony business, marital harmony, you know, I think that everything can be just right. Jobs, work, life, family, all of that. But if it's not working in bed, the relationship is more likely to fail. And my clients come to me knowing that, and they don't want their relationship to fail. And some of the couples who come to me have read some self-help books, and if they're really motivated, especially your book, they can really get a lot of help from that, and they don't need therapy. But sometimes they're too entrenched in all their patterns for so many years, and then the quarantine put a death stamp on some of these relationships even more. So it's we've got to have marital harmony, yes, but you got to have it in bed.
Yeah. Now, you know, it is possible to have a successful marriage that's sexless. If people mutually decide not to have sex or only have a little, that's fine. But generally, people go to sex therapists because of desire differences. One of them wants to have more sex than the other. And desire differences are almost inevitable in relationships because everyone is sexually unique. So when you put two unique people together, harmony is something that you have to work on. It doesn't happen naturally. It's not God's gift. It takes work and effort. But it is available, and all the research shows that people who have sex problems, if they use self-help resources or they use sex therapists, they almost always get better. They may not be they may not get as good as they want. All their dreams may not come true, but sex therapy is remarkably successful from a public health point of view. Almost everybody feels better, and about 2/3 of people have all their problems resolved.
Two-thirds, you say?
Yeah, about 2/3. The research shows that self-help resources improve sex for 2/3 of people, and then the 1/3 who don't get help from sex from self-help books like mine, if they get sex therapy, 2/3 of them get better and their problems are resolved, which leaves about 10% of people with chronic sexual frustration, usually because of medical issues. They have diabetes, they have heart disease, they have cancer, they have medical problems that just preclude pleasure. But even people who are have chronic medical problems and disabilities, with counseling, with help, with professional assistance, can have the best sex they can possibly have. So everybody can have better sex.
And I've been privileged to see this up close and personal over the many years, to see transformations in couples who are finally touching each other and having good sex and having better communication and all of that. And you've seen it. You said that you've received some thank you notes because you've answered so many questions and you have gotten some thank you notes. And also, you've talked to people because you've also done some counseling. I guess it was more in the beginning of in Michigan when you were still a graduate student.
I've done some counseling. Mostly I do it now through email. I don't really meet people, but I'm primarily a journalist, and I'm very careful to understand the limits of my own abilities. And if I feel like people are asking questions that go beyond my ability to answer them, I always recommend that they embrace a course of sex therapy or sex coaching, because it really... Not everybody needs sex therapy, not everyone needs sex coaching, but the people who do need it really do need it and almost always benefit from it. It's sex therapy almost always has a happy ending, and people are feel good about it, and they feel much better about each other, too.
They do indeed, and you have a phrase in your book, sex is endlessly fascinating. I've thought that for years, and that's one reason that, God willing, I won't have to retire. I keep my marbles, because it just is the most satisfying, wonderful work to see people happier and living more fully and enjoying their bodies. You know, especially women. So many women have body image issues that are debilitating for them, that as they're being naked with their partners and being sexual, perhaps they're not in the moment. They're often thinking about sagging breasts or chubby thighs, and it's kind of a sexual narcissism in a way, that they're just so focused on the self and how they look that they can't get out of themselves and really be present and be also a giver of pleasure. The body image is, and of course you address this in your book too.
Yeah, it's everyone has body images, and everyone's dissatisfied with themselves in many ways, and we're all hyper self-critical. And that is one of the reasons why massage is such a great thing, because when you run your hands over your lover's body, you're not saying to the lover, oh, you know, your thighs are too fat, your breasts are too saggy. You're just saying, hey, I love touching you. I love touching you. I love who you are. I love touching you. And that can help people resolve some body image issues. Everyone is self-critical, and massage is a way to find mutual acceptance. Kissing is a great way to find mutual acceptance. And so much of sex really revolves around kissing, hugging, and gentle massage-like caresses. And then if you do enough of that, you start to forget the fact that you have a double chin, and you wish your physique was a little bit different. It just doesn't matter anymore if you are closely, intimately in touch.
It's so true, and I was mentioning that my husband gives me a weekly massage on his massage table, but we do plenty of massaging each other before sex, and it is wonderful. And I remember you're suggesting, even in your book before this one, Great Sex. What was the rest of the title? Your book.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
What?
That was a while ago. I forget my own subtitle.
You've been talking about whole body massage for a long time, and making love. The man should be making love the way the woman prefers. That has been your message, and it's such a good one. And I remember reading it many years ago. I still have your first book, Sexual Solutions, that was published in 1980.
Yes,
and you were saying to me off the air that, you know, we at least books these days don't go out of print because they're digital and they're printed on demand. It's Sexual Solutions, it must be out of print.
Sexual Solutions, yes, stayed in print for 25 years and then went out of print. I'm very proud of that 25 years. Not too many
I would think so.
Last that long. And, you know, one of the... you know, speaking about non-genital touch, I mean, there was this wonderful study asking couples what kind of touch they really liked the most and missed the most when they didn't have. And one of the top answers was cuddling while watching TV together. See,
really?
A lot of couples spend a fair amount of time sitting on the sofa watching TV together,
mm-hmm.
But not touching each other. And it's so easy just to move over a little bit and massage someone's hand, massage someone's thigh, you know, put your arm around your lover and just cuddle up. Cuddling is such a wonderful activity, and it's something that we instinctively do with children. We hug them, we cuddle them, we embrace them. And as we get older and supposedly more mature, this wonderful activity often drops out of the menu, and I would urge all of your listeners to, tonight, when you're watching TV with your special friend, just sit a little closer, rub up against that person, and without, you know, attacking them and molesting them, just very gently be in touch and show them that you care.
I recommend it to my clients a lot, and sometimes I'll say, too, if the woman says, I love a foot massage, I said, while you're watching TV, put your feet in his lap, and then you, guy, massage your feet. And this is such a lovely thing, you know, the whole field of reflexology. It goes back, I think, 5,000 years in China, and all these great nerve endings are in the feet. And
all the major nerve lines end in the feet, and foot massage is incredibly powerful. It's one of the most relaxing forms of massage, and it's perfect for TV watching. Exactly
it
what you
is.
Said, Diana. You put your foot in the other person's lap, and then you just let them do their thing. And I often recommend taking a damp washcloth, putting it in the microwave for 15 seconds to heat it up, and then put that washcloth on your special honey's foot and start to massage through the washcloth. So the washcloth is warming the feet and the finger pressure is providing delicious sensations. And that's a wonderful appetizer for what might happen later.
I love it. That's such a good idea. So you put the damp washcloth in the microwave for how long? I definitely want to incorporate this.
Just experiment a little bit. Just get it. You don't want to get it scaldingly hot, but you
want
to get it warm. And or you can just use warm water on the washcloth.
Yes.
And you wash the feet. Not even washing the feet. You're just warming the feet and getting them prepared to receive gentle caresses.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Let's pivot a little bit to masturbation, because and that's, of course, discussed in your book. Everything is discussed. Masturbation can be a way for people, especially women, who want to explore what they like in bed. And I do think that coming out of the quarantine and maybe seeing it as an opportunity how you can make sex better. So a woman might, if she's saying, I can't be very responsive. And I think masturbation is a chance to explore her own body, her responses, and improve her skills, and, of course, unwind. And sometimes I think I suggest to a lot of women that they get a book of erotica that helps keep them focused. A lot of women prefer to read something, and they use their imagination rather than to watch porn. And, of course, experimenting with sex toys, because we know that vibrators can help a woman achieve orgasm. And what I've found is that the more she practices on her own and teaches her partner, the easier it is for her to reach climax. And and then the show and tell part. If a man really wants to learn how and where a woman likes to be touched, watching her masturbate will be the best tutorial ever, I think. So the show and tell and the masturbation in terms of knowing her own body and her responses. Can you elaborate for us a little?
Well, I totally agree with everything you just said. And to add to that a bit, you know, like I said earlier, intimacy means self-revelation. And what more revealing thing is there in life than showing your lover how you make love with yourself? Masturbating, self-sex for each other, is a very powerful tool of intimacy, and it also teaches you how your lover likes to be touched. Now, the problem with it is that a whole lot of people are super embarrassed to touch themselves in the presence of their own lover. And, you know, I recognize this. This is a lot of people just won't do that. But what I suggest is that you come close. You try it. You show. You coach. You coach your lover to provide the caresses that you would like. And so, if you are nervous, if you're anxious about self-sexing for your lover, then you invite your lover to touch you and you coach them. You say, a little more of this, a little harder, a little lighter, please, you know. And the whole idea is to stress the word coaching. You know, when you use the word communication, when relationship experts use the word communication, a lot of times, particularly men feel intimidated. They feel like, you know, they're going to be harangued. They feel like they have to make speeches. They feel like communication is a set of huge proclamations. No, communication in an intimate relationship is really about coaching. And coaching is brief conversations that are meant to make things better. So if you play basketball and your coach makes a few suggestions, that's not threatening. He's trying to help you get better. Same thing with sexual coaching. I'm very much in favor of using the term coaching and talking about the way lovers talk to each other in terms of coaching, because coaching is a positive thing, and you don't have to make big speeches. You just say, "Hey, a little more of this, please." So you don't have to be super articulate. You don't have to be a trained psychologist or sexologist to coach a lover sexually. You just have to say, a little more of this, please.
Exactly. A little more of this, please. And it would keep it simple, stupid, right? Remember that old phrase?
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
In fact,
I can see how I didn't think about this before, and this is why I love having somebody like you on the program, because it's useful, because you really know how men are thinking, and so the word communicate is sometimes threatening to men, and because it infers that they're going to have to really step up and be very articulate and right. So yeah. I like that, the distinction between coaching, where you can have a brief conversation and the intention is simply to make things better. Also, putting your hand on top of your lover's hand can be a way to learn how the lover likes to be touched.
Particularly for people who are nervous and who are not into masturbating for each other. You take your lover's hand, you put it on wherever you want, and then you just move their hand on you so you like it. And that's a wonderful way to communicate how you like to be touched. And you don't have to say a word. You can just say, hey, this is how I like it. And then beyond that, just show them.
So, exactly. And I think that if we're talking about improving the sexual relationship, we need to talk about being intentional. And when we're talking about being intentional, I really believe in dressing for sex. Here I am, a woman in my 70s, and I'm bragging a little bit, but Brian really my husband likes for me to dress up, and I like it too. So I've developed quite the wardrobe of sexy things, lingerie and garter belt and stockings. And Brian says, I think I'm a very lucky man because he has all these visuals, and I just enjoy it. I'm a little bit of an exhibitionist anyway, back from my acting days. And did you know, Michael, a lot of people don't know this, but after teaching school for a couple of years, I had an opportunity to be a showgirl in a high-end show in Miami Beach, and I had never worked topless before. I was raised in a good family, and we don't show our tits, so except in private relationships. But anyway, I took the leap, and I decided that I would do this, and I did it for a year and a half, and it was revelatory in so many ways. And of course, I learned how to present myself and how to dance and how to be. I enjoyed being a little bit of the exhibitionist and seeing the reaction of men in the audience. And I learned a lot about myself. I was still in my 20s then, and it was fun. And the good thing from that was that since I used eyelash glue to put glitter on my nipples, I toughened my nipples, and then a few years later when I had my first and then later my second child, I breastfed them easily for a year because I had tough nipples. I didn't have to break them in. So my daughter has a nickname for me. My daughter, sometimes when she's joking with me, she calls me glitter tits. Now, I did take a bit of a departure there, but I wanted to share that it can be a lot of fun, too, if you can work up the nerve to dress for sex, and then the more you do it, it's like a lot of things, the more you do it well and enjoy it, and maybe do a striptease for your partner. And so what do you think about all these dressing up for sex business?
Well, undressing up is a wonderful thing, and the part of the allure of lingerie is not just what's revealed, but what the woman feels. And so, a lot of men think that if you want to buy lingerie for a woman, it's a skimpy bra and panty set. Actually, a lot of women really love the feel of like a silk robe. Silk is so wonderful on the skin. And at the same time, it gives the woman the control over what she reveals, how she reveals it, and how much she shows. If you have a big robe, they're also easier to buy. A lot of men try to buy lingerie for women. They have no idea what size their gal is. And so they buy stuff that doesn't fit, and it's all very awkward. Meanwhile, if you buy a silk robe, one size almost fits all, fits most people.
Good point.
And so the sizing issue is gone, and what you have is a wonderfully sensual fabric on skin, and then the woman takes the fabric off and you massage her skin. And so lingerie and playing around, striptease type of stuff is another way to slow things down so that you're not just plunging into intercourse. It extends the experience. It gives it different dimensions. You know, and particularly silk garments, I think, are a wonderful way to make intimate garments exciting and sexually arousing and have a great time.
Yeah, and maybe even play out some fantasies. One of my outfits is a schoolgirl outfit. And so I can be the little schoolgirl, and my husband can be the principal. It enables playing out fantasies, and this brings novelty to the sexual relationship, which gives you dopamine, the hormone of arousal, and we all need novelty. And of course, that is something that couples should work toward if they want to reengage and rewrite their sexual script.
Right. Yes. Novelty is critical, and you know, when people date, dating is exciting in part because you're doing so much new together. You're with a new person, and you're doing new things. And when people couple up, most couples resonate with the fact that sex in hotels is usually hotter than sex at home. Why? Well, hotels are new and different. Hotels are novel. And novelty is one of the 10 ingredients of great sex that I write about in Sizzling Sex for Life. And the idea of constant novelty, it's like courting your lover for life. Trying new things, courtship for life introduces a lot of novelty, and that makes sex a lot hotter.
It sure does. And you are a big advocate for scheduling sex and scheduling a sex date. And so let's talk a little bit about that.
The myth is that people make love when they're in the mood. After you've been together a while, the mood doesn't strike that often. And and that's not to say that people stop liking and loving each other. No, they do. It's just that they're in a different stage of relationship, and one where they are not completely obsessed with each other as they are in the initial hot and heavy period. The hot and heavy period rarely lasts more than a year, after which, you know, ardor kind of subsides. And you can rev it up with novelty. But the other thing is that sex therapists almost universally, as you know, Diana, they almost universally recommend scheduling sex for long-term couples, because then you make time for it. You make it a priority, and you can work it into things that are new. Let's have a sex date and do this. Let's go somewhere and have a sex date. Scheduling sex is, in my view, absolutely critical to couple harmony. And one of the top reasons that couples consult sex therapists has to do with desire differences, the way to negotiate your way out of desire differences is to schedule your sex so that both people know exactly when sex is going to happen. So the person who wants more sex doesn't have to beg and grovel every night, tonight, tonight, tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who wants less sex doesn't have to constantly feel besieged and beleaguered and no, 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 get away from me, you boor. It ends the conflict and the fighting, and restores harmony. Many couples are astonished to realize that once they start scheduling sex, and a typical couple is going to schedule sex, 2 to 4 times a month is what typically Americans do. Once you schedule sex 2 to 4 times a month, then the relationship becomes a lot more harmonious, that you don't have the nightly struggle tonight, tonight, tonight. And the other thing that happens is that it restores non-sexual affection. When couples are having...
Yes, that's so important, yes.
When couples are having desire differences, the one who wants it more is constantly touching the other one, thinking that they might get lucky. And the one who wants it less is always shrinking back from touch because they don't want to give the wrong impression. Well, if you know that you're going to have sex day after tomorrow, well, then tonight you can cuddle by the TV, you can smooch a little bit, you can touch each other gently and in a non-genital way with no implication that it's going to go any further because you know you're going to have sex two nights from now. Tonight is non-sexual affection. And non-sexual affection, like cuddling around the TV, is so important to people and yet gets very little press. You know, the self-help magazines, you know, the women's magazines don't write about cuddling by the TV, but it's very important. And once you schedule sex, it becomes a lot more possible and enjoyable because it doesn't have any implications that, you're going to fight over what to do next.
And in addition, when sex is scheduled, it can you can feel an anticipation for what's coming, and for the low sex person, there may be some anticipation, but mostly it's a relief that they're not going to be badgered every night. That it's on the calendar, they're going to have sex Friday night, and it's going to be maybe a date night out. Now it can be a date night out a little more than it, but in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, I have a whole chapter on planning your date night at home because that was, it still is. A lot of couples are not just raring to go out quite yet. But, yeah, the anticipation, looking forward to sex, and that can be a real turn-on, just the anticipation.
Yeah, and the realization that your lover wants you. You know, the old adage is that men lust and women want to feel desired. And that's true to a certain extent. But men want to feel desired too. Everyone wants to feel desired. Everyone wants to feel like, God, my lover actually wants me. And then that is a very powerful emotion. And when you're anticipating your next sex date, that can be a wonderful way to start the initial warming up process.
It's a wonderful way. And, yeah, you're right. Everybody wants to feel desired. I have low desire women who will say, I want to want. They really do want to want. So, of course, especially for postmenopausal women, it's really necessary when their hormones to get their hormones balanced again. Some women may be candidates for bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which is what I've been on for 20 years, and other women, because maybe a fear of breast cancer or whatever, are able to use topical. And this requires, of course, seeing your doctor, but Vagifem and some other estrotest and some of the other topical things can increase a woman's desire. But mostly it's going to be her partner and getting in the right frame of mind. But still, if she's having painful intercourse because her vagina's dry, there needs to be some medical attention. And you alluded to this earlier in our conversation, Michael, that some people have medical issues that really get in the way of their sexual desire.
Yeah, you know, the lubricants can take care of a whole lot of vaginal dryness issues and insertion problems. You know, that the guy might not be super firm, but if his penis and her erotic openings are well lubricated, that can really help both people function and enjoy themselves. I'm a huge fan of lubricant. I think everyone should use lubricant all the time, and it's not just a treatment for vaginal dryness. It is an enhancement that makes touching more sensual.
Yeah, I've encouraged some of my female clients to give their guys a hand job using a lubricant.
Oh, yeah, that's,
and it can make the hand job way more fancy.
yes. When men are reluctant to use lubricant, if you use it on them in a hand job, it usually changes their mind.
Exactly right. And again, people may need to experiment a little bit with lubes to find out what works best for them.
Oh yeah. Some of them are waterier, some of them are goopier. You can try them out and see what you think. And keep it playful, keep it experimental. Try to laugh about it. Good sex is not some kind of forced march. It's play.
Right.
It's adult play. And the more you play, the more playful you are, the better you can play.
Sizzling Sex for Life, page 5. If sex makes people happy and lovers do it primarily for pleasure, what is sex? Adult play. Hear. It's adult play. And sex toys are adult toys.
Yeah, sex toys.
We need, as you said earlier, and I say a lot, we need more play in our lives. You know, so much of life is so serious, and it needs to be serious, but we also to have balance in our life. We need to play and to be silly. You know, the word silly comes from Old English, and then it was pronounced "salag," and the original meaning was not ridiculous or frivolous. It was the original meaning of "salag." If you had "salag" in your life, you were happy and healthy and prosperous. So here's to more silliness in our sex life, and that's where we can really play and let go. Letting go is essential, especially for female orgasm.
Letting go is threatening, but if you're with someone you trust and you play well together, then you can let go, and it's a wonderful it's a wonderful feeling that you can't match any other way.
You mentioned the word safe. Yeah, a lot of women don't feel entirely safe, and some of these women have had sexual abuse in their background, and you have some wonderful chapters on abuse. And I co-led 2 women's sexuality groups for 7 years with, you know her, Dr. Maria Flaherty, and all of these women had experienced sexual trauma, so they were having trouble reaching orgasm. So the first intervention was to have them masturbate, to find out what worked for them, and to reach orgasm. Because when a woman can reach orgasm by herself, that gives her some empowerment. But then the trick for many women is to reach orgasm with a partner.
Right.
And sometimes incorporating the sex toy, the vibrating sex toy that the man gets to use on her, perhaps after she's shown him, oh, it can just add so much more fun to the sexual relationship. Much more fun.
Yep, and it's just another way to play. You know, a lot of men feel like, oh, God, if she uses a vibrator, it's like I'm obsolete. I'm being replaced by a machine. That's not true at all. I mean, the best carpenters use power tools. It doesn't replace the carpenter.
Oh, I like
it just,
that.
Just gets the job done faster and more efficiently. And and women, vibrators, you know, vibrators used to be a fringe item. Right now, today, the latest research I've read is that more than half of adult American women own at least one vibrator. So vibrators are an experience of the majority of American women have vibrators, and very few of them use them in partner sex. They are almost always used solo, although some couples do incorporate them into partner sex, and they're another way to play. But women in particular often need to learn how to reach orgasm, and vibrators are just a wonderful way to do that. They're not just toys, they're tools.
tools, and we need to stop because I just heard our music coming up here. So, Michael Castleman, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. You're so well informed. And in my show notes, I will put the website, greatsexguidance.com, and people can write to you through your website, and I encourage people to get your book. It's the best book on sex, I think, ever written, Sizzling Sex for Life by Michael Castleman. So thank you again, Michael. I'll have you back.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Great. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody, and be kind to yourself and to your partner, and I wish for you some hot sex. Bye.